It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
Yeah. And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Morning. I welcome everyone to this confirmation hearing on the nomination of
Mr.
Judge
Chairman
Brett Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chairman.
To serve as Associate Justice.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like
Supreme
to be recognized for a question
States.
Before we proceed. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be recognized to ask a question before we proceed. The committee received just last night, less than 15 hours ago, 42,000 pages of documents that we have not had an opportunity to review or read or analyze.
You're out of order. I'll proceed.
We cannot possibly move forward, Mr. Chairman.
I extend
this
a very warm welcome
we have
to Judge Kavanaugh.
Not been given an opportunity to have a meaningful
his wife,
hearing
Ashley,
on the nominee.
There are two daughters.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with my colleague, Senator Harris. Mr. Chairman,
Judge
we received 42,000 documents that we haven't
and
been
everyone
able
else joining
to review
us
last
today.
Night, and we believe this hearing should
I know
be postponed.
This is an exciting day for all of you here, and you're rightly proud
Mr. Chairman,
of
Mr. Chairman, if we cannot be recognized, I move to adjourn.
The American people.
Mr. Chairman, I move
to
adjourn.
Directly from Judge Kavanaugh later this afternoon.
Chairman Chuck Grassley gaveled the meeting to order the hearing for the first day of hearings for Brett Kavanaugh. Really, America's disgrace. And I think it wasn't even just so much the protesters present in the room, which we're going to talk about that later. It was the behavior of the Democratic senators. You heard them. They were in their own way doing the very same thing that the protesters in the room were doing. It got so bad that Brett Kavanaugh, they had to take his children out because it was so distressing to them. We're going to talk about that more later, but right now, we're going to talk about what we're going to talk about today. I am at the Phoenix Park Hotel at the 12th Annual Federation for American Immigration Reform Radio Row. I've been here all 12 years, and sitting across from me is the president of Federation for American Immigration Reform, Dan Stein. Dan, thank you for joining me.
Sandy, it is so nice, lovely to see you here in person.
Thank you. You're
a remarkable person at every level, and we're all privileged to have you here each year.
You're sweet. I appreciate that, Dan. When you're a walking encyclopedia, and I want to get to that in just a second, because we want to talk about what's immigration. Really, the polls are showing is still the number one issue on people's minds as the 2018 election midterms come along. But you have to tell the politicians, you never know that. And I want to talk about that, Dan. But first, I'd just love to know your thoughts about that hearing last night.
Well, of course, the breakdown in civility and decorum has become, frankly, a chronic feature of American politics. This polarization, the idea that the Democrats believe that their political viability depends upon this level of incivility, knowing full well that they can't stop the Kavanaugh nomination from being confirmed because they themselves changed the rules, and therefore they have nobody to complain about but themselves. But certainly that kind of spectacle. I think Americans truly believe that the hallowed process of a Supreme Court nominee, while never entirely free from policy disputes and politics, unfortunately, because of the court, to see this kind of disrespect against someone like Mr. Kavanaugh and Judge Kavanaugh and his family is outrageous. Whatever Kamala Harris believes she's trying to do to position herself to run for president, personally, I believe that was very politically damaging for her, because that kind of lack of decorum, compromises the very essence of what the congressional prerogative is, if you will, in terms of how people work together. I mean, look, the alternative to the legislative process and our political system of government is to decide things by violence in the streets. So either you believe in the system and want to respect it to allow it to function, or you don't. And where exactly do the Democrats believe they're taking the country if they're going to try to disrupt the very functioning of the process if they don't get their way? Because what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. Republicans, obviously have tried to work with them on a range of issues. They've done everything they could to not work with Trump on most of the essentials of the things he's trying to get accomplished. And hopefully the American people are watching this and realize that the Democratic Party of the 1970s and 80s and even the early 90s is not what's happening to the Democratic Party today. And every American should ask, what on earth happened to the Democratic Party?
Exactly. And I have to say, Dan, it wasn't just Kamala Harris, although she was the first interrupter.
It was Cory Booker.
It was also Dianne Feinstein, the filibuster.
Motion to adjourn is supposedly always in order, but Grassley hadn't even been able to introduce the witnesses.
Every single person on that side of the room, on that committee, in the Judiciary Committee, really acted out. It was embarrassing. And you know they were doing it in consort with those protesters in the room. We know now there was a call to kind of coordinate that. I'm going to talk about that later in the show, and I don't want to take our time talking about that. But it is a notable event. And I think I'm going to start with something I wasn't going to start with, Dan, and that is this next Supreme Court nomination and the new configuration of the court.
Right.
In regard to immigration, what issues would that court be hearing? What's left for them? Are there more things on sanctuary cities?
Yeah, I mean, in the pipeline, there are all these challenges, mostly orchestrated by the American Civil Liberties Union, to most of the initiatives the Trump administration has taken. Certainly the travel issues, eliminating the so-called DACA program, yeah. Deferred Action Against Childhood Arrivals, the DAPA program, a range of other things the administration's tried to do. And on tightening up on the so-called H-1B foreign labor visa, the L visa, lots of things that are being litigated in courtrooms all across the country would eventually come before the Supreme Court. And we know that future Justice Kavanaugh will be a lot like Justice Gorsuch in that he's a strict constructionist. He'll look at the congressional intent and he'll implement the law in the way it was intended by Congress. You know, why do we have these battles the way they are now? Because the politicization of the Supreme Court, the idea that judges can arrogate into themselves the right to decide their own policy preferences instead of interpreting the law, has turned the Supreme Court nominating process into a battle over the super legislature, which the Supreme Court has essentially become. If Congress can maintain its prerogative to decide who comes in, how many, to give the president broad authority to suspend the admission of any class of aliens that he deems in the national interest or for national security. I mean, these are major principled constitutional framework issues that if the Democrats had their way, they would be nominating justices who would apply outside the country to people who've never set foot in the country the kind of substantive due process rights that would make it impossible to deny people the right to come in. We saw that in the travel ban case, where universities were suddenly being allowed to challenge an historic prerogative of the president for national security reasons to deny the admission of aliens, claiming, oh, they might want to enroll in our college, getting standing in the Ninth Circuit to bring that kind of case, historically without precedent in the history of the Republic. Okay, so this is a true sort of existential threat to the future of the country to fill the court, as the Democrats would, with people who would make the immigration laws virtually unenforceable because as a party they no longer believe in national borders or even the nation state.
No, it's true.
This is a serious thing. The Democratic Party has been taken over by radical fringe people like George Soros who drops in all this money, who simply doesn't believe in borders. And you see this blowback in Europe, Eastern Europe and other countries fighting back against the influence of Soros. And to some extent, this hit on the Open Society Institute that took place during the hacks that WikiLeaks released all those emails during. People don't pay attention to this. But a lot of the attacks, these hackings of the emails were associated with the fact that Soros has got his grip on the Democratic Party and his pushback in Eastern Europe against Soros' influence in our Democratic Party today.
Well, I think that, you know, you've just touched on something that's so complex, but we need to set on that for a second, because Soros is doing a massive campaign, has been for a long time, to propagate open borders in all over the world. In fact, he's been banned.
It's not open borders. It's no borders.
No borders. Okay.
They want to eliminate. Look at Europe. Angela Merkel made a major political mistake, wound up flooding Europe with people from other parts of the world, many of whom have assimilation challenges, to put it mildly. Now people in Europe are asking, there's a great new book out, Paul Douglas Murray, called The Strange Case of the Death of Europe, that traces back Merkel's decision-making process and shows how she completely blew it, basically. And the whole EU got dragged under in the process. Whether the Europe that we know remains Europe that we've known for, you know, the last 200 years, over the next 50 years is going to depend upon how the EU pulls together to stop the hemorrhaging of its borders. Donald Trump stepped into this and realized that we face many of the same problems, and to his credit, has been willing to take to the American people the tough decisions that need to be made, to see the opposition that Trump administration is facing, even from within the Republican Party, the Koch brothers and others who just want cheap labor.
The Republican leadership.
Where's the wall funding? Okay, you would think the Republican Congress would have delivered the wall funding
you would think now, Sandy. Yeah, no, but they've undermined everything he's tried to do.
Well, the Koch brothers are talking about funding primary opponents, Democrats, to help run against Republicans who don't carry the cheap labor agenda.
You know, I just read an analysis.
There's nothing wrong with wages going up in this country, Sandy.
Really, you're talking to people that work really hard, so they would agree with you on that. I read an analysis yesterday, and his name is, he calls himself Spangler. And his point was that it's not Donald Trump's manner, it's not even the way he talks, it's not his personality that is so objectionable to the resistance, whether it's Republicans or Democrats. It is this whole immigration issue. Because in the immigration issue, it really hinges the future of this country. Right now, we're sort of at a 50-50 standoff. Dan, isn't that interesting?
Well, the intransigence of the elite class, which for various reasons, mostly self-interest and greed, refuse to recognize the American people's very strong desire to control our borders and limit immigration, it's the same process has happened in Europe. And you say, well, what would it finally take to make these self-interested elites, these multimillionaires and billionaires who live in this detached world, who think they can always insulate themselves from the impacts of these policies, what would it take to turn them around? Well, to see what's happening in Europe, okay, the daily attacks, the violence and everything else, and still see that these elites, like Merkel, will not bend in the face of this, tells you that the American people are just going to have to continue to fight this battle in a very powerful and passionate way and not give up. People need to understand and go out to the polls and vote their conscience in this November election, because, look, Lindsey Graham might take over the Judiciary Committee. If Trump were to fire Sessions, which we would encourage him not to do because he's the expert on immigration issues, Lindsey Graham is going to try to give us another amnesty con. Democrats control the House, and Trump's going to be faced with having to veto a big amnesty bill. That's not necessarily a scenario we'd all like to see, but people need to understand Trump needs their support on this issue. Maybe you don't like his personality. Maybe you think he's a little gruff, okay? He's not everybody's idea of a paragon of virtue. It would be nice if he were a little more reserved sometimes, but he has effectively used new social media to bypass what used to be, you know, the Praetorian Guard media, as Mark Levin says, and it's been very effective. So, I mean, we'll see what happens, but for Americans who've been fighting for stronger border control and better immigration, the Trump administration has been a godsend.
Let's talk about that.
A lot of the bad things that Obama had done fixed it.
Let's talk about that, Dan, because the president has been blocked almost at every turn. So what has he managed to accomplish?
Well, first of all, he's undone all the things the Obama administration did to sabotage our inability to control the border. So he's reformed asylum policy. Obama was sneaking in, he wanted to bring in 130 or 140,000, quote, refugees under darkness, you know, color of darkness, without any consultation to the American people. He's cut those refugee admissions numbers down to 25,000, 35,000, really reduced that flow, taking control of the refugee admissions process. He's hammering the states to try to get them to cooperate with the federal government. He's doing a lot on document security, entry-exit system. He's tightening up on the H-1B program. Part of the reason wages are going up, you know, we've often said for wages to go up, immigration must fall, right? For wages to rise.
And that's not just laborers, that's professional, which is the H-1B.
So he's cracking down on the H-1B abuse and all that, and suddenly you're starting to see wages rise across the board in this country, and for less skilled Americans too, finally. And so his labor market tightening and immigration is part of what's promoting the higher wages for American workers. He's eliminating a lot of fraud. The USCIS has implemented a whole lot of new policies to try to improve adjudications, eliminate fraud, increase cooperation between USCIS and other agencies in Homeland Security. So if somebody applies and they're deportable, it gets referred over to ICE for the ability to start immigration proceedings. And so, you know, he's trying to integrate the agencies to work better. I mean, it's like a sea change. It's been 100 years since we had a president like Teddy Roosevelt who had this kind of commitment to immigration controls.
Not the least of which, kind of to double back where we started, he's appointed judges who are constitutionalists, who will actually apply the law. We've seen one of the reasons all of this chaos is taking place in the courts is that we have lower court judges adjudicating adjudicating things they have no right to adjudicate, and no one's to stop them.
Well, they're about to issue regulations, and all hell's going to break loose that says, look, if you come here as an immigrant and you go on welfare, you can't stay, or sponsors are going to have to pay for everything that you – and naturally, we're seeing a decline in food stamp use and other things by foreign nationals who want to get a green card. So, I mean, under Obama, he ramped up all the, you know, food stamp eligibility, and we saw people flooding into the programs. All that's getting reversed now. Of course, there's going to be the big pushback. But look, the average American wonders, if immigration is such a good thing, why are we admitting all these people who need welfare? If you don't have the skills composition, you come here, you're going to, even if you're working two jobs, you're still going to be on public assistance because the wages that are being paid are so low.
Yes,
you
exactly.
still need to have free school lunches, subsidized this and that and the other, housing and all that, medical care. So it's this cheap labor subsidy is something that Donald Trump is trying to put an end to. So at all these different levels, a lot of this is Jeff Sessions. So, you know, you knock out Sessions, replace him with Rob Rosenstein or what? That's not going to
cut Lindsey Graham.
Or a Lindsey Graham or a protege of Lindsey.
Yeah.
You know.
It'll never happen. And and we have to say the president, of course, when he was campaigning, led on this issue. I think it's arguable that that's the reason he won. People are seeing what's happening to the country, the change in the fabric, and they don't like it. And they
know it's funny, when Molly Tibbet got murdered.
Yes.
You know, immediately. Well, first of all, I remember all the big show of this little girl who was separated for all of 30 seconds from her mother. And it was on Time Magazine and all that. They exploited this little girl to maximum advantage. Then Molly Tibbet dies, and all of a sudden it's like, well, you can't use her as an example. I mean, that's got nothing to do with him or nothing to see here. And, I mean, you can't – nobody who has half a brain can look at this double standard and say, all right, this is enough, okay? She'd be alive. Molly Tibbet would be alive today if our immigration controls worked. Very simple. And yet – this is a dialogue the Democrats, the media, some of the media don't want to have.
It's also a dialogue that as the Republicans enter the midterm, which is less than 60 days away, it's the subject they don't want to talk about. And it is the winning topic. You know, if they would just
Trump
embrace
has laid it.
Laid
it all out for them.
Yes, I agree.
You know, if the Republicans lose the House, it's because they dropped the ball on the immigration issue. It's very simple. They have all the opportunity. Trump's laid it all out. Systematically, Democrats do everything they can to try to push them under the rug or exploit things like, you know, the childhood separation, which they helped create, by the way. They helped create the policies that produced that fiasco. And yet the Republicans, you know, they have the data, they have the information, they have everything they need. They need to stand with Trump on this issue, double down, and motivate the base to get out.
No question about it. Dan, this is number 12, Radio Row for the Federation. Do you remember when you started?
Wouldn't be Radio Row without you. You know, this is the largest convention of radio talk show hosts on a single issue in the history of the industry.
Really?
On a single issue, yeah.
And it's just growing. It's bigger this year than ever, right?
Well, this is the major issue that matters. People care about trade, obviously. They see Trump doing a lot of stuff on trade. They expect the Republican Party to stand with Trump on the immigration issue. That's the lesson here.
Yes, I totally agree. Well, a lot's coming up. Dan,
thanks.
I appreciate it. Listen, you guys have fought this battle for a long time. I remember when it started. I think it was the Bush years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Well, we wouldn't be here without you.
Yeah, well.
You're very important listeners who are hugely important in this whole issue.
They are on board, absolutely, Dan. They feel very passionate about this. I think a lot of Americans do. They're just quiet about it. So we'll see what happens in the midterms. Dan Stein, president of the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Thank you, Dan. Sandy Rios coming back in just a second from Phoenix Park Hotel, Radio Row. Be right back.
Netflix continues to ignore the outcry about 13 Reasons Why. The American Family Association, along with Parents Television Council and several other pro-family groups, have reached out to the streaming service, urging the cancellation of their program. Netflix has not even responded to our letter. Instead, they released an even more vile Season 2 and are producing Season 3. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings says their program is engaging and that it fosters discussion of taboo topics like suicide and sexual assault. But at what cost? 14-year-old Anna Bright and several other teens have committed suicide after watching the show. Hastings calls our objections propaganda. Does he feel the profitability of his company is worth more than the lives damaged or lost because of his show? Please sign our petition to Netflix, learn more, and share our action alert when you visit afa.net. And pray Reed Hastings will recognize the dangers of 13 Reasons Why.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope?
I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
Last year, I visited a startup company.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
It was in Silicon Valley, the hotbed of new ideas. What an intriguing culture. A culture in which 6 months is an eternity. A culture in which people were sleeping under desks and eating cold pizza for breakfast. Why would people get involved in this frenzied culture? Why? Hope. Hope is what the future will bring. Success, a future, financial rewards, and notoriety. Most notable accomplishments have come from people who see a future and, because of hope, give their lives to making that future happen. Jesus brought hope, not short-term, startup hope, but hope that lasts forever.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at GetHopeRadio.com. That's GetHopeRadio.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. There may be a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit Truett.edu today.
The confirmation hearing for Judge Brett Kavanaugh was anything but a civil affair. Protesters by the dozens disrupted Republican lawmakers tried to sabotage their opening statements. Senator John Cornyn of Texas.
I haven't been in as many confirmation hearings as some of my colleagues, but this is the first confirmation hearing for a Supreme Court justice I've seen, basically, according to mob rule.
NBC and CBS News report the disruptions were planned and coordinated by Democrats, a charge that Senator Dick Durbin did not refute when confronted during the hearing. If true, the Democrats involved should be held in contempt of Congress, and their mob of hired goons should face the most severe of charges. If nothing else, the Democrats have demonstrated they are a party that favors anarchy over the rule of law. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
That was a lovely sound of the hearing yesterday. But the reason I chose that loudest voice, was the voice of Linda Sarsour, who was the organizer of the Women's March. You've probably seen her on television because she always has the hijab. And she doesn't wear the black burqa, but she is very much an activist. She's part of the Muslim Brotherhood outreach. And I thought maybe our next guest, by the way, we're here at Radio Row at Phoenix Park Hotel right across from the Capitol in downtown D.C. And Robert Spencer, you'll recognize his name. Robert is the director of Jihad Watch and a best-selling author. His latest book is The History of Jihad from Muhammad to ISIS. And he sits before me. Good morning, Robert.
Great to be here, Sandy. Thank
Last time I saw you, you had just been poisoned. I think I asked you that. Have you been poisoned this year?
No,
has it been
a good
year?
Yep, it's been a good year.
Actually, you were poisoned overseas. Was it Reykjavik?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, and they were trying to kill you. So it's really not funny, but forgive me for jesting about it.
Well, as long as, you know, it all worked out okay.
That's right. Yes, good. Thank God for that. All right, so Linda Sarsour, she was in that room yesterday. Tell us about her and what you know about her, Robert.
Linda Sarsour is an interesting character. She is one of the leaders of the feminist movement today. And yet, as you noted, she wears a hijab. She was one of the organizers of the Women's March on Washington the day after President Trump was inaugurated. And yet the hijab is not, as she insists, simply a matter of personal choice and a manifestation of her individuality, because there have many women, actually we'll never know the number, who have been brutalized and even murdered for not wearing the hijab. And it is actually a garment that is a symbol of women's oppression, because the whole idea of it is that it's the woman's responsibility to make sure a man isn't tempted, and if he is tempted, it's her fault. And so she has to remove the source of the temptation. And so this whole idea is misogynist to its core, and that this woman would be a feminist leader is a sign of how confused our age really is. She's openly pro-Sharia. She has ties to Hamas, the terrorist group in Gaza, and she is somebody who has espoused extraordinarily far-left positions. Of course, she's a leftist heroine. And you got to wonder, who is it that gave her a pass to get into the hearing yesterday, and that these senators ought to be held to account for this?
You know, Robert, actually, that reminds me of, I want to hear, play a clip and let you listen to it, because there were three doctors who gave an interview outside the hearing. They came from Texas because they wanted to go and sit through the hearing. And they gave kind of a testimony about what they saw in the line. And that's a clip. Let's listen to a little bit of it, you guys. It's clip one.
I'm Dr. Tom Schleter from Texas. We came here just to participate in the hearings, to get in the line. They told us, you know, be out here maybe 8 o'clock, 8:15, 8:30 at the latest, to get in line so we could go inside to hear the hearings. We got here about 8:15. There was already about 100 people in line, and most of them would be probably classified by me as opposing everything that is going on with Judge Kavanaugh. And so we began to see a process of things unfolding while we were standing in line that kept the line from going ahead. One of the things was that there were people that were coming along and had a bag of money, and the people would hand them a piece of paper and then they would give them money. So we knew that money was being exchanged for some of the people to be here just to protest.
Hey everybody, I'm Dr. Chris Dundas from Corpus Christi in Texas. It was very sad. This is a very time-honored procedure in the process, but they seem to have no heartfelt convictions about why they were here. Again, if you had to pay somebody to protest, that's a good tell. I believe that in a process like this, it's such a time-honored institution. It's such a time-honored process of righteous government and civil government. It was just totally going to be sabotaged by these guys moving around and disrupting things and being arrested and being proud of it. And some women came back from the hearings after their turn in the chamber, and they seemed disappointed that they were not arrested.
And I'm Dr. Burton Purvis from Arlington. This experience is quite an enlightening time to stand. I took off my credentials and walked among the people to get more information and to be more acceptable to those around us. Quite interesting as we listen to their attitudes and actions about why they were here and what they wanted to do. I think the most telling was listening to them giving names and addresses and giving them personal information for when they were arrested, and then heard of the things that were going on inside and celebrated those who had been keeping a record of who was that got arrested and who had been carried off.
Robert, that's so people were paying them in line, and also part of the story that they told, they were place setters, and they made sure that the first 100 or so were protesters, you know, before the regular folk could even line up. So somebody's paying them. And then, of course, when they got into the hearing room, you've got the Democratic senators doing the same thing.
Yes.
In their role, they did the very same thing as the protesters. So who was responsible for that? You said the senators should be held accountable. Who do you think was cooperating, making that possible?
Well, you know, you never know who's paying them, but certainly all the Democratic senators should be questioned about this.
Yes.
And, of course, they would charge that it's all a partisan investigation. But at a certain point, we're going to have to draw a halt.
Right.
Or the disruption of the democratic process is going to continue. This all was illegal activity, and these people should have been held accountable, not just the protesters, but those who enabled them. Obviously, the Democratic senators knew what was going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah, there was allegedly a phone call with Chuck Schumer organizing this. And so it's really disgraceful. But, Robert, let's get back to the influence of the Muslim part of this. You know, not that long ago, this was the focus of discussion for me a lot, the Muslim Brotherhood, beginning with the Bush administration up until President Trump took office, actually. Now, has the Muslim Brotherhood infiltration into this country lessened, or is it they've just gone underground, or what is the status of it from your perspective?
Well, remember that Representative Michelle Bachmann back in 2012 named several people who were in the Obama administration who were Muslim Brotherhood operatives and called for an investigation. And then, of course, Senator St. John McCain said that she was a racist and an Islamophobe and there was no investigation. But those people really were Muslim Brotherhood operatives. And there should have been an investigation. Now, many of them have left, of course, with Trump being in office. But the problem is that they filled the agencies, the FBI, Homeland Security, and others, with other operatives who are still in place and who are resisting the president's attempts to drain the swamp.
So as you look, we're here about immigration, whether it's legal or illegal. So as it intersects the purposes of like the Brotherhood and others to get here to do us harm, do you see that as an improved situation now, or are there report? You know, there was a report, I remember, Judicial Watch was talking about this for a long time, about this encampment in the, on the border of Texas where these jihadists were training. And that's the last, actually, honestly, Robert, that I've talked about that. Are things like that still taking place? Are they getting through on the southern border? Even though we're not hearing about it?
Things like that are still taking place. And I'm sure some people are getting through, but there's no doubt that quite a few are getting caught. There were about 180 Bangladeshi nationals, and Bangladesh is now a hotbed of ISIS, who were crossing into Laredo, Texas from Mexico and who were caught over the last year. There have also been a large number of Somalis who have been caught on the Texas border trying to get in. And it's clear that the president's travel bans and the president's general crackdown has made them try to resort to these surreptitious means, when under the Obama administration, they could just buy a ticket and fly into any airport.
Yes.
And so they're still trying to get here. They're still trying to get into place for jihad acts. And that does have to do with border security.
You know, a different kind of immigration is the chain migration. And it really stunned me. I just did a long foreign interview on the Pakistani IT brothers, who certainly co-opted the entire IT structure of the House, at least on the Democratic side. And I think others have told me they think they certainly had access to Republican computers as well. So these guys that are Pakistani, they came over on visa lottery. And they have done great damage. In fact, and of course, the judge let them off, said they had suffered enough. It's just an amazing story.
It is.
Tell us, Robert, about the Pakistani intelligence services are some that we talk about the least, but I understand that they are some of the most deadly.
They're very dangerous. It's an extraordinary story when you consider that Pakistan is supposed to be a U.S. ally, and yet the ISI, which is the Pakistani CIA, the spy service, they have been implicated in numerous jihad terror plots. The Indian government has repeatedly insisted that the ISI was behind the Mumbai jihad massacre, in which hundreds of people were killed in 2008, and others as well. And the ISI has also, as long as 10 years ago, been identified by the New York Times, no less, which is hardly a source that would be ordinarily interested in giving out this kind of information, but apparently it was just too much to ignore. They were funneling the money we were giving them to fight Al-Qaeda and the Taliban to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. So this is a sham alliance. The president just recently cut some of the funding. It needs to be cut altogether, but certainly he's moving in the right direction.
Where are we with the vetting of people from Muslim countries? Because it's very confusing. There have been, what, three different orders filed by the president, all of them challenged. So where are we with that?
Well, right now, the travel bans that were upheld by the Supreme Court, and so they need to be revived and expanded by the president. But right now, I believe they've all expired. However, there is a sharp decrease in the number of people entering the country from these jihadi hotspots. And that's what they are. That's why he wanted to limit immigration from them. But the vetting, the real unfortunate aspect of this is that the vetting is well nigh impossible. Because you're talking about people who are very practiced in deception, that the jihadis are taught how to appear as if they are moderate secular Muslims. They're told. ISIS had a manual that I spoke about, I wrote about in my book, The Complete Infidel's Guide to ISIS, a few years ago, that they would tell them, don't carry a Quran, don't go to mosque, don't wear Islamic garb, wear Western dress, fit in, and you'll get right in.
Wow. Well, Robert, we have to do a long-form interview on your new book, and it's The History of Jihad from Muhammad to ISIS, just came out. And so Robert Spencer, Jihad Watch, that's where you can find him, I think, as long as they let him stay on social media.
Yeah, so far.
Yeah, really, so far today.
Yes.
Anyway, Robert, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much, and see you soon. All right, Sandy Rios coming to you live from Radio Row, Phoenix Park Hotel, downtown Washington, D.C., and be back right after this.
For even when we were with you, we would give you this command. If anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. October 11th, 1798, John Adams, the second president of the United States, addressed the Massachusetts militia and said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." He rightly highlighted the reality that this great American experiment in self-government and liberty would only work where the popular societal ethos is derived from the character produced by the Holy Spirit's indwelling. The recent popularity of socialism is directly related to America moving further away from God.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner. Or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This is Brian Fisher with today's Life and Liberty Minute. All we need to know about immigration, we can learn from Revelation 3:20. "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and eat with him and he with me." Jesus recognized that there are sacred boundaries that not even he will cross without permission. He will not transgress the sovereignty of the individual and cross the threshold into our lives unless we invite him to come in. According to Acts 17:26, borders between countries are God's idea and not man's. Nations have the moral authority to decide who crosses their borders and who does not. Border security is a preeminent concern for every nation, even if securing its border requires a wall.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I had a lot of credit card debt, and I couldn't pay my bills. I was feeling so bad. I got to a point where I needed some help. So I reached out and contacted Trinity.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813 to talk to a certified counselor.
They were able to take all of my different payments and put them all together.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
And they were actually able to work with my creditors. I've been able to pay off close to $15,000 in the last 18 months.
If your debt has you down, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
My name is Stephanie, and I'm debt-free for keeps.
1-800-788-1813.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. As senators postured yesterday in connection with Brett Kavanaugh's nomination over the future of the Supreme Court, in a nearby hearing room, a sober briefing was given about the future of the nation's security. Two undersecretaries of defense and a three-star general described the alarming growth in ballistic and hypersonic missile threats against this country. They warned not only North Korea and Iran pose potentially existential dangers that must be countered, so too do the rapidly accelerating nuclear and missile buildups of Russia and China. Fortunately, these civilian and military leaders discussed the bipartisan mandate they now have to field space-based sensors and anti-missile defenses to defeat such enemy designs. That's a most welcome and necessary departure from past foolish notions that space is and must be kept pristine and the Russians and Chinese allowed to threaten us with impunity. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Immigration is the fault in all of the problems that we're having because we cannot get them to sign legislation. We cannot get them even to the negotiating table. And I say it's very strongly the Democrats' fault. They're obstructing. They're really obstructionist. And they are obstructing. The United States will not be a migrant camp. And it will not be a refugee holding facility. Won't be. You look at what's happening in Europe, you look at what's happening in other places, we can't allow that to happen to the United States, not on my watch. For the rest of the world, you look at everything that's taking place, pick up your newspapers this morning, and you see. We want safety and we want security for our country. If the Democrats would sit down instead of obstructing, we could have something done very quickly. Good for the children, good for the country, good for the world. It could take place quickly. We could have an immigration bill. We could have child separation. We're stuck with these horrible laws. They're horrible laws. What's happening is so sad. Is so sad. And it can be taken care of quickly, beautifully, and we'll have safety. This could really be something very special. It could be something maybe even for the world to watch, just like they're watching our great economy, how it's soaring. They could watch this.
That was the President of the United States sort of casting a vision, something that so many of us have been thirsty to hear for so long. As I said before, polls are showing that the American people are concerned about immigration. Many of us believe the reason President Trump won the election was because what he promised on immigration. We just watched as a young Iowa girl was murdered by an illegal immigrant, Molly Tibbetts. I mean, it's fine. It's tingling because we all have kids, and she's in a little town in Iowa. If you're not safe there, where are you? There was another story that didn't really get as much press, but it even sounds worse, and that was an illegal immigrant just in July beheaded a 13-year-old special needs girl and murdered her grandmother. There are so many stories, I could go through a whole list of them, but it's not that native-born Americans can't do horrible things. It's just that we do not need to open our borders to just anyone, especially with people with criminal records. By the way, Diamond and Silk are next door to us in the next booth, so that's the fun you're hearing next door. Sandy Rios with you live from Phoenix Park Hotel here in downtown D.C. Hector Garza has just joined me. Hector, you're going to have to speak up. Hector is the National Vice President for the Border Patrol Union, and Hector has been with the Border Patrol since 2000. He's been developing and implementing a media plan because mostly I think, Hector, you feel like the Border Patrol, and I agree with you, certainly now, has been mischaracterized by the American media. How's that coming, by the way?
Well, good morning, Sandy. So definitely, yeah, that's something that's been happening for so many years, especially under the Obama administration. It's great to be here to be able to talk about the border, the issues that we face as Border Patrol agents. And, it's been politicized, and unfortunately, it's hurting the American people, it's hurting the American lives. And we need to secure the border, plain and simple.
Hector, right now, the left has, you know, kind of targeted ICE agents more than they have Border Patrol. I don't know if that's my impression anyway. Are you guys getting attacked or singled out as ICE agents are?
Yeah, we are. We see that a lot in the local communities. Unfortunately, what you're seeing with these people trying to abolish ICE, it just goes to show how ridiculous these people are willing to get. The fact that they want to abolish a law enforcement agency that is responsible for stopping a lot of dangerous criminals, terrorists, drugs from coming to the country. And the same can be said with our Border Patrol agents. They don't like our Border Patrol agents simply because the issue has been politicized. At the end of the day, we need to save American lives. We need to secure the border. And really, our congressional leaders need to get their act together to make sure that they provide the proper funding so that we can secure that border.
I don't need to tell you that within the last few months, this summer, the border has been the topic of the news almost every night. And, of course, what we're hearing about is the separation of mothers from their children. It's just been the media just gets in a frenzy, whether it's This is before you would remember, Hector. I remember, it just goes through my mind, the homeless situation in the 80s. They decided there were too many homeless people. And so they reported on every night. And every night the numbers would grow. Oh, now we were wrong. There's 4 million homeless. And they created a perception that really wasn't the case. That was one of the first times I ever saw that happening before my very eyes. Do you think that what was happening at the border was exaggerated by the press, or did they get that accurately?
Oh my God, it was such an exaggeration. And like President Trump says, it's fake news. And unfortunately, the media will run with these stories. And unfortunately, the rest of the American public that is not aware of the border issues will fall for these lies. But with the whole child separation, you have to understand that these smuggling organizations were bringing kids into the country and pairing them with adults that were not even related to those kids. What are we supposed to do as a law enforcement agency and as a country and as a government? We're supposed to look after those kids and make sure that those kids are not victimized and that they don't fall into the wrong hands. Now, come again, like, there's kids that are coming with parents, and that's all right. But a lot of these cartels were pairing up these kids with people that weren't even related to the kids. So as a law enforcement agency, we have to act. We have to protect those kids.
Well, and there was a judge that was appointed, I think, by Obama or Bill Clinton, who passed a ruling that the children cannot be incarcerated with their parents. The parents have to be incarcerated because they've broken the law by illegally entering. And they can't keep the kids incarcerated, I think, more than, 30 days?
It's actually 20 days.
20 days? Yes. Yeah, so then what are you going to do? You can't adjudicate their parents that quickly in most cases. And so then you've got these kids. So that's one of the reason, that's what was being enforced. So the kids were taken away. I don't know where they were sent to, these detention facilities, which that, you know, when I was growing up, detention had a really bad connotation. But when you see the pictures of these detention facilities, they have playgrounds and televisions and, you know, great food. And
they're actually like boarding schools. They have a recreational time. They have breakfast. I mean, you name it. It's not cages like the media was making it seem. These are some very nice detention facilities. Probably nicer than what these guys have ever experienced, because again, they come from very poor countries. But these are kids that were separated and they were detained separate from their parents because they were being adjudicated through the criminal process. They were treated with dignity and respect. These people were not being treated bad. It was just a whole bunch of fake news with a whole caging of the kids and stuff like that.
Hector, are they there? Okay, so during that midsummer months, it seemed as though the border was flooded again, as it was, before President Trump took office. There was a drop-off after he was elected. And then when they saw that the immigration laws were not going to be enforced because Congress wasn't going to do it, they started coming back. So what's going on now?
Well, we're seeing the same thing. We're seeing the people coming across, the drugs are still flowing through the border. And unfortunately, we're going to get these type of crimes happening in the United States, like with Molly or being murdered. These illegal aliens that commit crimes in the United States, they come through places like Laredo, Texas, the Rio Grande Valley, Phoenix, Arizona, you name it. And we're still seeing the same thing. Unfortunately, our numbers as far as border patrol agents were still down from where we need to be. But we do have more support from President Trump. But President Trump can't do it by himself. He needs the support of Congress to be able to provide that funding and to be able to provide that border security. Right now, unfortunately, through what we see in Congress, we just see a whole bunch of acts that are being encouraging illegal immigration. So, for example, President Trump was trying to discourage illegal immigration by actually prosecuting people for entering the country illegally, which is a crime. But again, the fake news media came back and they made it seem like if President Trump was ripping kids from their mother's arms, which was all fake news.
Yeah, fake news. My understanding, Hector, is that there's going to be a press conference. I think it's just sheriffs, but I'm not sure. This morning in front of the Capitol, and they're going to be asking for a GoFundMe to fund the wall. Isn't that interesting?
It's interesting, but you know what? I don't blame those sheriffs because we need to do something about it.
Yeah.
We need to do something about it. We need to fund the wall. We need to fund the border patrols that we need along the border. And without that, we're never going to secure the border. We're going to continue to see these crimes that we're seeing.
You remember when Ted Cruz suggested that we take the massive funds of, like, I think it was Carlos Is it Carlos Danger? Is it one of those? One of the cartel? One of the drug lords?
Chapo Guzman.
Chapo.
And it was called Chapo Act.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, and the idea was to take the drug money that he has and build a border. What I mean, that is now that's common sense.
It's common sense. Taking the money away from the criminals. And again, Chapo Guzman was a very successful drug lord in Mexico. That's now undergoing prosecution, but he's got billions of dollars, billions as in B, right? And definitely, if that's what it takes, and yes, Ted Cruz did introduce that act, and of course, it didn't go anywhere because Congress doesn't have their act together. Yeah. But hopefully the sheriffs are successful with this GoFundMe account, and hopefully we can get some money and do something about it.
So, Hector, there's such controversy still about the border, about a wall. A lot of naysayers, and then there was reports that the templates for the wall that were built were not going to work because of the varying terrain that was going to be laid on. What do you know about that?
So it's very simple. The National Border Patrol Council actually does not support a wall from sea to shining sea. What we support is a physical barrier, a wall, fencing, something on the border that will be placed in strategic locations that will give Border Patrol agents the advantage to be able to catch the people and catch the drugs that are coming across. Very simple. There's areas that we don't need a wall along the border, and President Trump already knows this, and he's talked about that in the past. We've had conversations with him as far as a wall and in strategic locations, and he agrees. He agrees that these walls need to be placed in different areas, areas where there's high smuggling activity, areas where our agents are constantly being assaulted on a daily basis, and these are the type of barriers that we're going to have to use so that we can stop these smuggling organizations from bringing their bad business across.
The arrest, or at least the extradition, of the Mexican national who came across the border and killed Brian Terry, one of the Border Patrol agents, this was 2010, I think,
yes.
And I've actually interviewed his family here at this Radio Row, and all these years, the Mexican national who did that has been protected and not brought back. Now he's been brought back. Is that meaningful to Border Patrol agents now that there's going to be maybe finally justice?
It is very meaningful because obviously our brother in green, Brian Terry, was murdered by this criminal organization, and we're happy to see that hopefully justice will be done in the courtroom. But it's something that should never happen. As you're aware, this happened under Obama's administration, under Fast and Furious, and that should never happen.
Which was a gun-running operation that the Eric Holder led from the Justice Department, mm-hmm. that people were not supposed to have known about, where they released guns into Mexico. Did we ever figure out why they did that, Hector?
No, Eric Holder, the then Attorney General, just was found in contempt of Congress, and... we don't know why, but we are happy that this man has been extradited, and will hopefully face him justice.
Hector, in the few minutes that we have left, what would you like people to know about Border Patrol agents? How should we think about you? How can we actually pray for you? How can we help?
Well, so I think what people need to understand in the interior of the United States is that what happens on the border does not stay on the border. A lot of these criminals that are coming across that have criminal records, they're coming into the interior of the United States, and they're going to be committing crimes in the United States. So the problems at the border don't stay at the border. So I think everybody needs to get involved and be aware of what's actually happening on the border, with the type of criminals that are coming across, and the type of drugs that are happening. And familiarize yourself with the agency that is the U.S. Border Patrol so they can understand what we do as Border Patrol agents and how it's such important work for our country.
There's such concern and talk, and rightfully so, about the drug problem in the United States among our young people, just the availability of drugs. How much of that, you think, do you know, what a percentage is coming across the southern border?
It must be at least an 80-90% of that percentage. Most of the drugs do come through ports of entry and between ports of entry. And it's something that we need to stop, and it's hurting our kids, it's hurting our communities, and we need to get our act together.
It's really interesting. The American people understand that, but the politicians don't seem to care. It's like they make a lot of noise about their sympathy about what's happening with young people and the drugs, but when they know that most of it's coming across the southern border, they want to do nothing about it. It's just amazing. I'm assuming we're out of time here. You are encouraged by President Trump's election.
Of course,
right,
yeah, definitely. We support President Trump, and we're grateful that he's our president, and we support him, and he supports our agents as well.
All right, Hector Garza, the National Vice Vice President of the Border Patrol Union. Hector, it's a pleasure. Good to see you again this year.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios, I've been with you from Phoenix Park here in D.C. We'll be back tomorrow with Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.